so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, September the 13th. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my guest co-host, Namir Farage.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Carol Davies McIntosh.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Thank you. I'm so grateful to have both of you here today, actually. Have you yet seen in the media the brilliant, striking, and profound, huge animal advocacy ad campaign that has hit the transit system both in Toronto and Montreal this month as of September the 1st? This is the Be Fair, Be Vegan campaign run by a nonprofit organization of the same name based in Colorado. Be Fair, Be Vegan is an animal justice campaign that shows the public the faces and feelings of the animals we use for food, clothing, research, and entertainment. For today's first interview, we will have the campaign spokesperson, Angel Flynn, on the show to tell us more about the impact these large-scale billboard and transit ads have had in places around the world. Check out our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver to see dozens of photos taken of the current Toronto campaign, especially when actor and vegan activist Joaquin Phoenix made an appearance at the campaign in Toronto this week. And big news for the animals this week, a statewide ban on the sale of fur in California was passed in the California Senate this Tuesday, marking a global precedent of the first state or province in the world passing such a law to ban fur. California is the fifth leading economy in the world, and the fur industry is a $5 billion business. So what does this mean for the future of fur? We will have Direct Action Everywhere's Almira Tanner on the show to tell us more about how this bill was passed and what we can see in the future of the demise of the fur industry. That interview is coming up in 31 minutes, so please do stay tuned. Now, the annual Vancouver International Film Festival is coming upon us and will take place at various local theaters from September the 26th to October 11th. Namir, you have had the pleasure of already seeing one of these upcoming films. Can you please tell us about it?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. I watched Murmur. It's a movie about Donna, who's played by Shan McDonald, completing her community service sentence at an animal shelter for a DUI charge. She definitely drinks a lot and seems lonely in the movie as she tries to reconnect with her daughter throughout the movie, does errands, pedicure. The cinematography, I thought, was really neat, for sure. A little more about the story. So Donna starts to adopt some of the animals from the shelter. The first one was Charlie, a small, medium-sized dog. Charlie is on his way to be euthanized because he's considered at end of life. Although Charlie's old and extremely sick because of a heart murmur, skin issues, and other infections, Donna takes on the challenge of loving Jerry and taking care of him. The manager at the animal shelter strongly opposed this due to affordability and circumstance, yet Donna was able to convince them she could do it. And she did. She also stopped drinking. So, the rest of the movie must be watched to be appreciated. As you already know, I like the movie, especially since Donna gave love to the animals and laid love to her back. She adopted animals regardless of their circumstances and regardless of her own circumstances. Both were extremely challenging. Murmur is a story about compassion and unconditional love, the love she gave the animals and how the animals loved her back. To me, it speaks to purpose and adding value to the world through unselfish acts of kindness. The director, Heather Young, played multiple roles in production, has a great track record. If you recall Milk, It's the same director.
Okay.
Maybe Fish or Dog Girl.
And she's Canadian.
She's totally Canadian. She's been nominated multiple times and won 2 awards since 2009. So please do go see Murmur at Vancouver International Film Festival. They will only be showing it twice on Friday, September 27th and Monday, September 30th. We'll also put up a bit.ly link to buy tickets on our website.
Yes, I meant to do that. I'll do that on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver. Now, I wanted to know a little bit more about your perspective about this film. When I read the description for it, because I haven't had time to watch the film yet, but I will, it describes the story as being about a woman who keeps taking in more and more animals to fill in the void in her life, which ultimately is what a lot of people do when they decide to adopt a companion animal or even to have a human baby, right? They feel that they need everyone needs company, everyone needs love. She had that love to give, and animals always have to give back. So the description sort of said that, you know, she's getting in too many animals, more than she can control. Is that what was conveyed to you in the film? Because it doesn't seem like you saw it that way.
No, not at all. I could understand why some people would watch it and think like that. I don't know if that was the effect the director and the screenwriter were going for. To me, it was really about purpose. Because...
like having a life purpose?
Yeah, totally. Okay. Because I read somewhere that the number one predictor of going mentally insane is not having a purpose in life.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know, for her, it wasn't any of that. She was drinking a lot, and, you know, she had an estranged daughter. She wouldn't see her. It was really sad. Like, I cried, mm-hmm. You know. Honestly, it was such a sweet movie at the same time. I think, again, because I'm vegan and also I have a pet. But yeah, her role at the animal shelter really transformed her. She started cleaning. She started, you know, doing all these positive things. I know Carol also saw it. I wonder what she thought.
Well, I thought it was quite dark, actually. That was kind of my impression of it. So I didn't enjoy it quite the way that you did, it sounds like.
It does seem like it could be a dark film, but Amir loved it so much. He's watched it, 2 times in the last 2 days? So that's a big shout-out for the film. Once again, Absolutely. You can get tickets at viff.org. That's viff.org.
Mosaic is proud to present the English Language Institute, located off of Commercial Broadway. Are you scared to pick up the phone? Our everyday English class can help. Our experienced teachers give you the listening skills to feel confident chatting in English with anyone, anywhere. For further information, visit mosaicbc.org/MELI. The Mosaic English Language Institute on Commercial Drive.
Hello again, this is Namir letting you know about our events coming up. So first is The Game Changer. You know about the big movie. You're going to be able to find this movie starting September 16th across the Lower Mainland, primarily with Cineplex Odeon. The much-anticipated documentary film, The Game Changers, with executive producers Arnold Schwarzenegger, James Cameron, and Jackie Chan, will be finally debuting in theaters nationwide. And we'll actually be having global premiere finally. So you know when that is. That's going to be on Monday, September. Yes.
16th.
So, 16th. Yes, so that's literally after this weekend. So James Cameron wants to make this movie after going vegan himself to show the world that eating a whole food plant-based diet is not only beneficial for athletes, but other than that, leaders become leaders in their competitive sport. This film showcases a variety of elite athletes, special ops soldiers, and visionary scientists who are all exposing the hanging myths about how food not only affects our human strength and fitness performance, but also the health of the entire global population. So do check it out.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a huge film, I think, for the rise of veganism. And it's because there's big people behind it who can make it go a long way, like James Cameron. And Jackie Chan is one of the executive producers, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And from what I understand, it's soon going to be available on Netflix as well.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm for sure going to go see it in theaters sometime next week, and it is playing all over. So please do go and support them. We also have Bellingham Veg Festival with the Meatless Meetup Group. If you don't know about Meatless Meetup, basically you have to sign up to meetup.com, which is basically an organizing platform where you can meet people, like-minded people that like to do things. The Meatless Meetup, I started with them actually about 10 years ago when I first became vegan, and they're just amazing. It's a great way to find support. And also they're dedicated to finding good eats. So Bellingham Veg Fest is coming up Sunday, September 22nd.
Right. And you can go on your own, but as Namir is saying, you can go with a group if you don't know anyone. So just go to meetup.com/meatlessmeetup and you can sign up for the group event that is going to be going there next Sunday. That's when it takes place. And I think we have time for one more quick event if you wanted to do a DXC upcoming event.
Absolutely. DXC is having an event. It's going to be a disruption event at a national grocery store. You can find the information more online.
We'll post the event on our Facebook page. I think it's there, yeah. So the name of the supermarket is undisclosed because, you know, we always want to catch them unsuspecting. And we are going to be speaking more about what this group Direct Action Everywhere does worldwide and in Vancouver. So we do have a Vancouver chapter, and you can actually check out their Facebook page as well at Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver for more info about what they're doing.
And their website is just Direct Action Everywhere.
That's for the whole chapter, yeah. But absolutely, for Vancouver, I recommend looking on the Facebook page that is specifically for Vancouver. But we'll be coming up soon with more about what DXC is all about.
Absolutely. And if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send it to info@animalvoices.org, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver.
For our first interview, we have spokesperson Angel Flynn on the show to speak about the Be Fair, Be Vegan campaign that was launched in Times Square of New York City 3 years ago and has since been making appearances around the world as far away as Melbourne, Australia, and as close as Seattle, Washington. This September the 1st, the campaign took roots in the cities of Toronto and Montreal as well, where the large spread vegan ad campaign images and messages is being seen across buses, on bus shelter ads, and covering whole subway stations. Be Fair, Be Vegan is an animal justice campaign that introduces viewers, that is the whole public, to the faces and feelings of the animals we use for food, clothing, research, and entertainment. Hello, Angel, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. It's good to be with you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yes, thank you for joining us today from the beautiful Hawaiian Islands to tell us more about this campaign, Be Fair, Be Vegan. Can you first tell us about the originations of this huge and thought-provoking campaign that is geared towards having perhaps the highest impact on the public where vegan advocacy is concerned?
Sure. Well, you know, the campaign was created and continues to be created by Joanna Lucas, who is a designer by profession. And she's also an animal rights writer. And I think these ads really combine those two talents of hers, because she's brought together this flair for the visually artistic with her talent for the poetic. So the billboards and the posters, all the ads, you know, they have this, you know, incredible theme of beautifully touching, striking black and white images with really dramatic messaging. And as far as bringing it to the public goes, yeah, the first time it was it went live was in in New York City in the middle of Times Square, and the New York City campaign had, you know, 200 street posters around Manhattan, and then it had two really large dramatic moving billboards, and one of them was in the Javits Center, which was another very highly trafficked area. But the centerpiece was this moving billboard in the middle of Times Square, and it was right above the Good Morning America studios, and it was incredibly heartwarming for the vegan community, because, you know, vegans in Manhattan were looking up and just couldn't believe what they were seeing. But that was really the beginning. That was the birth of Be Fair, Be Vegan, and that was how it all started.
Amazing. And our co-host Namir has a question for you.
Hello there. For those who haven't yet seen the ad images and messaging of this campaign, you can head over to our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver to see lots of photos posted from this week. But right now, Angel, could you kindly describe the scheme of what images and words the ad campaign entails?
Sure. Yeah, you know, we have several different series running at any one time. So so there's several right now that are running in Toronto and others in Montreal. In Montreal, the ads are mostly focused around this concept of different but equal. And that's been one of the themes that has run with Be Fair, Be Vegan from the very beginning. And the ones at Barrie Station in Montreal are many new images that we've never used before. One of the main things that Joanna does with these designs is choosing. She really goes through a painstaking process of choosing the best images that she can possibly find of animals' faces, photos that really show the expressions on the animals' faces and the individuality in their eyes, and you can actually see what it is they're experiencing because the images are taken in extreme close-up. So what you get is this impression of being able to really see right into the individual. You know, it's not just a photo of an animal. It's a photo of you can see the individual in the face, and because she's at the same time combining it with words that are very powerful. So, for instance, in St. George in Toronto, she's got the Imagine series. It's a series that uses a selection of shadow images. So an example would be there's an image where there's a mother cow in the foreground, and any vegan can see that this cow is despondent and depressed. And on the wall behind her is a shadow image of the cow with her baby. And in the front it says, imagine losing every one of your babies.
Yes, I do find myself when I saw all the ad images that were posted in Toronto earlier this month that I felt just so touched by them. I just can't imagine what other people are feeling. You can see the detail in that rat's face with his or her whiskers, and you know that that is a sentient being who wants to live, right? I just don't see how anyone can be subjected to these displays and not have a change of heart and mind. So what are the other cities where this campaign has run, and overall what has the reach been like, the magnitude of the potential reach that just the Toronto campaign will have during this month is hard to grasp for us animal activists who are usually limited to spreading the message on social media, individually on the streets or through a radio show. Do you have stats on how many people these ad campaigns have been reaching, or the reach that is projected for the current Canadian campaigns, for instance?
Sure. It's obviously it's hard to say exactly. We work with an ad agency, and they provide us with beforehand during the planning stage, which is, you know, really important for a campaign like this. You want to be sure that you are placing your billboards or choosing a station domination in a location that's really going to reach a good number of people and your target audience in particular. So the St. George display is right in the middle of a university area, for instance. So that's the kind of thing we try to plan using this agency. I think one of the best statistics I probably have is from our Melbourne campaign. Melbourne was the second city after Times Square. We went from Times Square to Tasmania, which was an interesting area to go to. Then we went to Melbourne. Melbourne and Seattle have probably been the two biggest campaigns that we've done since Times Square. And in Melbourne, we were able to really do an intense saturation of the city, which basically means that we had a lot of ads there. We have a lot here in Canada as well, which is really exciting. But in Melbourne, our ad agency actually gave us a report afterwards that let us know that the ads would have been seen, according to the tools that they use to determine these things, they would have been seen altogether by 70 to 75% of people. So they kind of break it down by target audience. And if you went by, kind of the millennial type age group, 75% of people in Melbourne would have seen the ads during the course of the campaign. And And across, you know, everybody, what they determined was that people would have seen the ads on average about 17 times during the time that we were there. And that number is really important, too. It's not just the number of people who see it. It's how many times they see it during the course of the campaign, because as that adds up, you know, they see it once, then they see it another time, then they see it another time, and in different parts of the city and in different formats, and that experience starts to create this sense of, you know, it builds up this sense of authority, for one thing, that they start to feel like, oh, you know, maybe this is something I ought to be taking note of. And of course, it also just helps to reinforce the messaging in people's minds as it gets repeated. In Canada, one of the very exciting things that's been happening is getting some press coverage. And in Montreal, the displays were actually featured on a show on Radio Canada, which I don't know why it's called radio. It's actually TV.
It's just the name of the French CBC television station.
Right.
Radio Canada.
Right. And this was obviously, you know, I'm watching it. I don't understand the language, but I can see that this is a very mainstream show. It was just a short clip, you know, 2.5 minutes, but they did a really good, fair and balanced piece on it. They interviewed people from, you know, the group that we worked with to bring it there, and then they talked to an animal ethics expert. And of course, when it gets into something like that, then the reach of the campaign really expands, and that's when, you know, people start to see it in different places around the country, and it starts to be taken a lot more seriously.
Well, through this ad campaign, Be Fair, Be Vegan, members of the public who have perhaps never even been exposed to these types of images or messages or ideas before are now, as we're seeing, suddenly forced to think about and recognize that fishes are sentient beings who don't want to die, that mother cows and calves suffer when they are separated because of the dairy industry, and that a baby chick or a rat are not here for us to macerate or test on for the egg industry or makeup products. And I just think a person's mind could just be blown from simply seeing these images, not once, not twice, but 17 times, as you're saying. And from what I've learned about marketing is you personally needs to see the message 7 times in order for it to be really planted in their head. So I'm just so happy and excited to see what will become of the Canadian campaign. So I want to talk more about the current Toronto Transit campaign. How did that come to be, as well as the Montreal campaign that is also running currently? When I first saw Anita Kreins' Facebook video showing the extent of the subway ads at the station at the University of Toronto a few weeks ago, I was stunned that something so large, detailed, and pro-vegan could take up pretty much every square inch of a subway station. How does this all happen? And can you talk to us about advertising guidelines in public spaces such as buses and bus shelters? I remember years ago, a local group in Vancouver had tried to get some vegan advocacy ads put in the SkyTrains here, and they were denied that due to possible offense that people would take, and also companies usually have to be mindful of what the other advertisers' ad messaging is going to be like in case it's conflicting. So how has this unfolded for the cities that you have already been approaching for the ad campaign?
Yeah, that is definitely something that you know, we have encountered over and over again is situations where you know, it hasn't worked out with the Toronto Transportation Commission is the one who approved it in Toronto. And it seems like whenever there's a transit station involved, or as you say, bus shelters or bus ads, we had a tram wrap in Melbourne that was rejected because these transportation governing bodies have to approve everything. And the TTC in Toronto, they've been amazing. They approved the campaign right away. It was not difficult for us at all, and we were tremendously grateful to them for that. You know, they made it very easy for us, and they accepted everything that we submitted, which was incredible, because as you've seen from the pictures, and I do encourage everybody to go and take a look at the ads, some of them are quite provocative. So the TTC were incredible. We have had other situations where it hasn't gone so well. In St. John's, Newfoundland, they rejected some of our images, and they put us through a really lengthy process of review where we had to, you know, and it's kind of ironic because As vegan activists, there are things that you learn when you become vegan that it's a big eye-opener at the time. Things like you know, male chicks being ground up alive and babies being separated from their mothers. When you first find it out, it's like a veil is lifted and you just can't believe that this is true. And then as a vegan, you just kind of start to think that maybe everybody knows this. Mm-hmm. And then when you go through a process like this approval with the Transportation Commission, you realize how much in the dark the general public is about these issues, because we were required to provide evidence to prove that what we were saying was true about the fact that male chicks are ground up alive on their first day.
Wow.
And of course we were feeling like, well, doesn't everybody
don't you know this?
Don't you know this already?
But actually that's why you're putting the ads up, because
exactly.
It's not common knowledge, and trust me, when I speak to people about it, they don't know that the baby 1 day old male chicks are ground up in the egg industry.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So it's about education, and I feel like even going through that review process is a part of shifting the public dialogue. And when we had you know, we were dropped in Melbourne at the last minute by Yarra Trams because they had approved our ads, and then right at the last minute they dropped it, and they cited one of their guidelines that, you know, depictions of violence are not allowed, something like that. And and of course we went, you know, we were sending out press releases saying, well, what about, you know, dead bodies on a barbecue, or you know, what about if it were a billboard for a fishing competition and a fish was on the end of a hook? Would you stop us from doing it then? You know, we're just pointing out we didn't even have depictions of violence, but of course the very nature of our ads reminds people of the violence that they themselves are participating in. And that's where you start to get, as you say, conflict with other advertisers.
Right. That's all true. So we only have a minute left. I'd love to see this campaign come to Vancouver. So partially asking this for my own purposes, but just for our listeners who've been inspired, how can people bring this campaign to their own city? How should they get started?
Right. Well, there is. We have information on our website for anybody who's interested to do that. And the very first step is to go and read through all the information very carefully, read our guidelines, and make sure that you understand them really well and that you are willing to adhere to them. The next thing people need to be aware of is this does take quite a bit of fundraising in order to do this. We're very fortunate to have a generous sponsor who's willing to provide 2/3 of the cost of any campaign, but it requires the local groups to fundraise 1/3, and that is quite a serious responsibility. So if people want to do this, they need to be prepared that this is going to be, it takes time, it takes effort, it takes involvement, and it takes a willingness to really, you know, make this an important part of your life for a period of time. They do need to be in a place where there's a good ground support from the activists around you. So I know you mentioned, for instance, in Vancouver, there's a really good activist network, mm-hmm. and that is a really important foundation for being able to bring the campaign to your area. But overall, we encourage people to get in touch with us. We do try to let people know that we're not really able to get involved in situations where people want to get one billboard or one bus shelter or something like that, because our aim really is to, as we said earlier, saturate an area so that people are getting that reinforcement all the time and building up that sense of authority around the messaging.
Well, thank you so much, Angel, for coming on the show today to tell us more about the Be Fair, Be Vegan multimedia ad campaign that has now hit the transit systems of both Toronto and Montreal for the month of September and beyond. To find out more about this program and how you can take part, please visit BeFairBeVegan.com. And if you would like to see the Toronto campaign stay on longer in the TTC, Toronto organizers have a GoFundMe fundraiser campaign that you can contribute to. You can find that link on our website, animalvoices.org, or at the top of our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Aloha and have a great day.
Thanks very much, Allison. Aloha to you.
Take care.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So at this time in the show, Namir, you're new here at Animal Voices. We would normally do about a 5-minute news segment But when I was producing this show, I thought, wow, we're already covering a lot of heavy news that has happened lately in Canada, and also coming up very soon in California, but it applies worldwide. So that's why we're going to be having a chat about the fur ban. But let's go a bit later. I understand you went to a vegan night market last night in Vancouver. We seem to have had these popping around a lot. I went to the very first one, which came, I don't know, it was either last Christmas or the Christmas before. I don't even remember. Was this your first one that you went to last night at the Waldorf Hotel?
No, this is the second time I went to the Waldorf Hotel.
You weren't scared by all the crowds, which is actually a good thing for veganism.
Last time I went there, it was a few months ago during the summer with a meatless meetup group. And you probably
lost them all right away, right?
We did at the end. And in the beginning, it was hard to connect and reconnect, but totally worth it to go with a group because, you know, you get to sample things, you get to trade stories and just make new friends. So you don't feel like you're there all alone. And even if you do go all alone, it's fine because there's all these like-minded vegans around you and other people that are just veg curious.
Right.
And last night's vendors were a lot like the same ones from before. You know, you had your typical Blue Huron Cheese people. You had the plant-based
But Karen McCaffrey's not typical, I should tell you. Yeah. She's actually really not typical, which is why she's able to make these beautiful, amazing cheeses.
But, yeah, culture, yeah. Delicious. I mean, you had the food truck peoples as well. Lots of arts and crafts, lots of vegan activism. Overall, I definitely would recommend checking this out. I think it was done by Peace thing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's one of the sponsors.
Oh, cool. And it's, I thought it was absolutely really well done. It was a bit rainy, yes, last night. And I think that probably detracted a bit of the crowd compared to the other one I went to a few months ago. It was like elbow to elbow.
Well,
like, it was crazy.
Oh, yeah. So when I went, when the first debuted, it was also rainy. And my sister and I went right at the beginning. Mm. And then when we left, there was an enormous lineup outside in the rain. So that didn't detract people from going. But anyways, this is an event that, you know, Vancouver is becoming such a vegan-friendly place that we have all these vegan vendors who can come up and make this market. And there's always hundreds and hundreds of people there. So, you know, stay tuned for these events and support your local events. So we're going to move on to our next interview. So for our feature interview today, we have California-based animal activist Almira Tanner on the show, who was recently appointed as the new leader of the San Francisco Bay Area chapter of the nonprofit organization Direct Action Everywhere. DXE is known for applying bold and long-planned strategies for animal advocacy that involves direct action in the public, at places of business, and within the governmental system. Much pressure has been enacted towards the status quo of animal exploitation industries in the past by Direct Action Everywhere. And not only are large holes being poked and the animal use industries being disrupted, but change is happening as well. Last year, because of DXE taking action within the city government, a ban on the sale of fur in the city of San Francisco was passed and enacted on January 1st of this year. But the fight doesn't stop there. This week in the state legislature, the California Senate passed Bill AB 44 to ban the sale of fur in the whole state of California. This means more wins for the animals, and we are seeing the fur industry crumbling down because of lobbying and action by animal advocates such as DXE. Almira is here today to tell us more about this fur ban and what lies ahead in the future in her work towards animal liberation. Hello, Almira, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's good to be back.
Yeah, nice to hear your voice. For those of our listeners who don't know, Almira comes from Vancouver and was a pillar of the animal rights movement here in Vancouver until she left years ago to pursue her activism in Berkeley, California. Now, over those years, I've seen and experienced some of the excellent work that you've been doing to advocate for social justice in the oppression of living beings. So congratulations on becoming the new leader of the Direct Action Everywhere chapter in the Bay Area, because I know you have what it takes to be an effective change maker for the animals. Congrats, Almira.
Well, thank you.
So first, First, let's get right to what happened this week in the California Senate to have this law voted in that will ban the sale of fur statewide in California starting in 2023. This is the first state or province-wide law of its kind to be passed anywhere in the world. Can you tell us about DXC's role in this victory? What steps were taken on DXC's part?
Yeah, it's been a really exciting week for us here and for everyone who cares about animals because of what happened in the California Senate. And, you know, this is, like you said, the first time that a large province or state has banned the sale of fur. So we've seen other countries or regions, say Europe, for example, ban fur farming. But this has really gone to target, people being able to buy fur in the first place, which is huge. And DXC, we're a grassroots network of animal rights activists. We've just started kind of dipping our toe into doing this sort of legislative work, and we've worked really closely with our partner organization, which is called Compassionate Bay. And we were not actually the group who introduced the legislation. That was done by HSUS and Animal Hope in Legislation, which is kind of the legislative group of Animal Hope and Wellness, which is run by Mark Ching. Some of the listeners might know his name, but what our role was really the on-the-ground mobilization. So every time, there have been so many votes in Sacramento, every time, a vote needed to happen, we were there, and having hundreds of people come to speak in support, because a lot of these hearings, people have the opportunity to actually go up to the podium and say, my name is Almira, I live in Berkeley, California, and I urge you to support AB 44. Those sorts of mm-hmm. things. We did a lot of that. We did protests and disruptions at places that are still selling fur. And then really notably, which I think was one of the reasons why we were able to kind of seal the deal on this victory, was our press team uncovered this scandal, basically, where right-wing groups were paying students to pretend to oppose the fur ban. So they found out that this, right-wing group mobilized the message, was actually paying people $175 to show up and pretend that they did not want AB 44 to pass, when really all they really cared about was getting $175. And our press team was able to uncover this, got widespread media attention, and I think really made a lot of legislators think hard about who was against this bill and why, because they were maybe thinking, oh, these people are just concerned about their jobs, and after that story broke, they were like, wow, this is just big money talking. So yeah, it's been a group effort. It's been great to see animal rights groups work together, which we don't always see, and a big victory for everyone.
In the California Senate meeting this week where this all took place, can you tell us about some of the pro-fur industry arguments that some of the senators or people in attendance made in trying to stop this bill from being passed? I saw that one member, James Gallagher, the committee vice chair of the California State Assembly, actually made the case that plants and animals are both living, so you shouldn't kill either. I was quite shocked to hear the "but plants, though" argument from an elected state representative. Please tell us more about the opposition statements.
Yeah, so there's kind of two different types of arguments that people made. One of them was the really absurd ones, you heard. Literally, this assembly member said, well, I go out and harvest a rice crop, every year. What about that? Or the plants, or someone went on, I think, a 5-minute ramble about their grandmother who was 93 and had a old fur coat, and, all those sorts of arguments that we've heard before. A lot of concern about people's personal choices to wear what they want or do what they want. And, as animal rights activists, we understand that the personal choices are great, but personal choices don't involve victims. So, it's not my personal choice to just go out on the street and punch people in the face or skin them to wear them for a fashion statement. So those are pretty easily, I think, thrown out. And a lot of the senators and assembly members themselves kind of rebutted and saying, look, this isn't the same as cannabis. That was another argument. Someone said, well, we can just regulate the cannabis industry. Why don't we just regulate the fur industry? And someone else was able to, reply, well, cannabis, no one is harmed when cannabis is harvested, and that's not the same for the fur industry. So those were kind of the silly arguments. More interesting, though, were the arguments where people said, hey, well, if we're doing this for fur, what's next, meat? You know, and kind of saying that, like, right. Well, that's ridiculous. And we're all thinking,
people yep, always go but, there.
You know, like, that's correct. You know, that is exactly what we want to do.
If change was never made, we'd be still living in the Stone Age, right? So
absolutely.
I feel like these people need to take like an animal rights primer first before they're allowed into such meetings to speak up for who they represent. So I'd like to know more about what exactly this fur ban will entail. As I understand it, just like the citywide ban in San Francisco, this ban will also affect the sale of new fur products in California, which means, this is like mind-blowing, it means no more Canada Goose in California and other similar mega fur corporations. And I also understand that this actually, it still needs to be signed by the government. I'm always wondering, what are the next steps? What are the next steps? When is this actually going through? So I guess first, could you tell us exactly what this fur ban will entail? What furs will be able to be sold and what will not be?
Yeah, so it is a ban on the sale of new fur products, which means that, you know, vintage, like secondhand shop or something like that, that is still allowed. And obviously, you know, we would like all fur products to be banned, and leather as well, and all wool and all these other, you know, fashion items that harm animals. But that's not the way legislation works. It's one step at a time. So we're really happy with how that's going. But there are a couple of other exemptions. Like, for example, religious practices. I believe there are, like, some indigenous peoples who use fur, and that is exempt. And it does not exempt sheepskin, which is, like, honestly very similar to fur. But for some reason, that's exempt. So this would include fur coats and also fur trim or gloves, hats, all those sorts of fashion accessories, purses that have any sort of new fur product on them that would come from coyotes or minks or raccoon dogs or any sorts of other animals that are exploited for their fur. And you are right that it's technically, like, it has not passed yet. The Senate was the last really big hurdle, but it, all legislation needs to be signed by the governor. So in theory, the governor could choose to not sign it and veto the bill, basically. We feel pretty confident that he's not going to do that. So far, he has not vetoed any other of the animal-friendly legislation that's come across his desk, and actually fur trapping was just banned a couple weeks ago or even last week, and he signed that. So I think he will sign it, but we are still waiting for that to happen. And the stressful part is we don't know when that's going to happen. We know that it has to happen before October 13th, but it could be, honestly, it could have happened in the next 15 minutes or next week or sometime, and we're trying to figure out how we can know when it's going to happen. But we are waiting for that signature to have, like, the real victory yeah. party and celebration.
Right. Our co-host Namir here has a question for you.
Sure.
Hello. Can you please give a summary for our listeners about the common practice of the fur industry that makes the trapping, caging, killing, and skinning of wild animals so cruel?
Yeah, I mean, the fur industry is really horrible. And I think one of the reasons why we've been able to ban it is just because of the sheer amount of investigations and exposés that have been done showing people how awful these practices are. And a lot of times people are starting to understand that no matter how you treat the animals, like skinning them for their fur is inherently violent, because some of the things that happen, so there's kind of like two, I guess, parts of the fur industry. There's the part of the fur industry that traps animals in the wild. So they're not raised in confinement. They're out living their lives until all of a sudden they stumble upon this trap. And these traps are extremely painful, obviously, because they have, like, you know, trapped this animal, or, you know, a steel jaw trap that kind of grabs one of their limbs. And then they're stuck there, sometimes for up to several days, which means they might freeze to death or starve to death or be dehydrated because they don't have access to food and water. Or sometimes they attempt to chew off their own limbs in order to escape the trap. And if they do survive the trapping process, they're just waiting for the trapper to come and bludgeon them to death or shoot them. So there's definitely nothing humane about trapping animals in the wild. But then on the other hand, for the animals who aren't in the wild, they are raised in confinement. And this is literally just like a factory farm for animals in the animal agriculture industry. They're in tiny cages. They can't go anywhere. They're living in their own feces. They're going insane from that stress and that confinement, biting the cages or something. And then what actually happens is that the way that they're killed often is through really horrible means like anal or vaginal electrocution. And they do that because they don't want to like ruin the fur. So just imagine living your entire life in this tiny cage and then, you know, the way that you die is by being anally electrocuted. And that's just like inherently violent. And I think it was really, really powerful to see the assembly members and the senators understand that. Like, this wasn't, fur was not banned because it was bad for the economy. You know, it was banned because people realized this is a cruel practice, and that's a really important precedent to set, that we are banning things that are cruel to animals, because that will help us, you know, I think bring about more animal-friendly legislation in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just so excited to see where this is going to take us, and that's why also I wanted to have you on the show, because you work towards all animal liberation and exploitation issues. So the fur industry is a $5 billion industry, and California is the fifth leading economy in the world. So there are a lot of proponents who are for the fur industry just simply because it makes them money. This, of course, can result in corruption and deception, as we've seen with advertising messages such as Canada Gooses, who used to publicly claim that the way they kill the wild coyotes is humane. But you probably know this, some months back, they actually removed all of this part from their website. And we also spoke about how the fur industry has recently been paying people to act as general opponents to this bill this year, like they're paid actors. And I posted a good investigative article by The Intercept on our Facebook page earlier today at Animal Voices Vancouver. And there's also the FurMark program. I wonder if you could just speak a bit about how the fur industry is trying to fight back and how they are deceitful, such as what we found out with Canada Goose in their messaging.
Yeah, the FurMark program is really interesting. So this is basically the fur industry's attempt at humane washing, in the same way that we see animal agriculture do that with cage-free eggs or certified humane or, you know, Whole Foods GAP standards. And they brought this program out in response to these bans that were happening in San Francisco and California and Los Angeles. And they said, hey, whoa, whoa, like, don't, let's not ban it. Like, okay, let's just regulate it. Let's just try to have this other, you know, scheme that we will certify how you do, you know, how you treat animals humanely. But like we talked about earlier, it's like, how do you do that? And you can't get away with saying that confinement or anal electrocution is humane. So luckily the senators did not fall for that trap, but I think it's just really important for people to realize, like, they did not make that program because they cared about the animals. That was a desperate attempt to try to, like, you know, or try to stop this ban. And that's the same thing that's happening in other industries as well. And like we talked about already, they're paying people to pretend like they oppose this. They have spent, you know, a lot of money on fur industry lobbyists because they understand that it's really, these precedents really make a huge impact. All, you know, 2 years ago, just 2 years ago, it was Berkeley. And then now we're at the entire state of California, which means I think that in the next couple of years, we will see a lot of other statewide fur bans because things spread fast once they've taken off. It's already been introduced in New York. There's talk about doing this in Minneapolis. Portland's got a fur ban team going. I know people have been talking about this in Vancouver, in Toronto. There's stuff in Europe. So I think we're going to see the fur industry fall quite quickly after a couple more major victories happen.
This is incredible, Almira, and that's what I wanted to get to next. But maybe let's just have a focus on Canada Goose, because, you know, Canada Goose has blood on its hands, and so do all the fur producers. And I despise companies like that, and I'm inundated with Canada Goose fur coats when the season comes here in Vancouver and on the university campus. They are just everywhere in my face, and it makes my blood boil, actually. And I do my outreach on campus to try to educate people, but how can you? They've already spent $1,200 on this esteemed fur jacket. Absurd, yeah. But they feel that it's going to give them some kind of social status because all their friends are doing it as well. So even for Canada Goose, do you predict a downward spiral for the demise of the fur industry soon to come? And take note that Canada Goose is actually looking into switching to faux fur products too. I don't know. I mean, they might have to do that just all out completely down the road.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that I haven't heard yet. That would be really incredible if they did that. I am not sure of the percentage of, you know, Canada Goose's sales that happen in, you know, California per se, but I am sure that everyone who's involved in the fur industry is freaking out a little bit right now and starting, you know, they're going to have to make some plans. And like, yes, this ban doesn't actually go into effect until 2023, like you mentioned, but they know they need to start making these changes now, especially because I think, you know, some of the major sales are coming from places like New York City and Toronto, where there already are plans in place to try to introduce fur bans, or fur bans have already been introduced. So it's not even like they're just hoping it doesn't happen, like it's already happening. And so I do hope they, you know, see the writing on the wall and start making those changes sooner rather than later. And hopefully other people just come to realize, like, this isn't actually fashionable. I think most people buy those jackets right now because they are a fashion statement or, you know, some sort of status symbol. And, like, what is it saying about you if you're wearing a coat that's literally been banned for animal cruelty? You know, a lot of people eat animals and whatever, but at the heart of it, I don't think the majority of people like animal cruelty. They do not support that, and this has made it very clear that fur is animal cruelty.
They don't. Yeah, especially on the university campus. A friend of mine, she's always asking people, do you know that that's real fur? And she says 99% of the time they always say no.
Wow. Yeah, you know, sometimes when we were out doing outreach and asking people to support the fur ban, people would say, fur isn't banned? I'm like, no, not yet. You know, people just assume,
people just
like,
live
that's this horrible thing. It must be banned.
People live in their ignorance. And that's why people and groups like you and DXC are here to make change and to educate. So we just have... We only have 1 minute here, Almira, but I can't end the interview without asking you, as a new leader of the DXC San Francisco Bay Area chapter, with your many years of experience in fighting for the animals, what further plans do you foresee in the future with regards to animal liberation? What are the plans down the road or in the near future that you'd like to highlight?
Well, DXC is getting ready for a good solid year of trials, I think, where we have trials happening in multiple different states, all for activists who are being charged with really serious crimes for rescuing animals. And I think this is going to be an incredible opportunity for us to expose the industry. We're going to get the industry on the stand. Our first trial is actually in 4 weeks, and it's a consumer fraud trial for Diesel Turkey Farm, which is a Whole Foods supplier. And I'm just really looking forward to pushing this idea of the right to rescue, where we do have the right to rescue animals from abuse. I think the public supports that. I think the courts are going to support that. Juries are going to support it. And I think it's going to put a real spotlight on the practices of the animal agriculture industry, where hopefully, like the fur ban has taken down the fur industry or is taking down the fur industry, we can do the same thing with animal agriculture in these trials. So I'm really looking forward to it. Even I'm a little bit nervous because one of those trials involved me.
Yes, I know. I just think that's incredible that people like you and your friends, you're putting yourself on the lines to be arrested so that you can make change in court. And that's what's going to put animal liberation forward. It's because of your sacrifices. So thank you so much for doing what needs to be done to make these changes happen. Also, thank you for coming on the show today, Almira Tanner, to tell us about the victory of the passing of Bill AB44 this week, which calls for a statewide ban on the sale of fur in California. To find out more about Direct Action Everywhere's work, you can follow them and your local chapter on Facebook and Instagram. Also, we have a very active DXC chapter here in Vancouver, which holds regular activists and social events each month, and you can find out what they're doing by following them on Facebook at Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver. You can also visit the main website, Direct Action Everywhere. Take care, Almira, and I look forward to seeing your updates in the future.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. So, you've been listening to Animal Voices, the radio show and podcast on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia. Please join us for next week's show on Friday, September the 20th. We will feature an interview with powerhouse vegan food justice activist Brenda Sanders, who is based in Baltimore, USA. Brenda is the founder and president of the Afro-Vegan Society, a nonprofit organization that works to make the vegan lifestyle accessible, affordable, and approachable in predominantly Black areas and and neighborhoods. She is also a co-founder of The Greener Kitchen, Baltimore's first vegan deli, and co-creator of the city's annual Vegan Soul Fest. There will also be much more on the show. We here at Animal Voices modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. All of our past shows can be listened to on our website at animalvoices.org, and this show shall be posted up there very soon. All of our past podcasts are also available on iTunes and Google Play, and you can join our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. There's always lots going on there, and we are now on Instagram as well at Animal Voices Vancouver. To close the show, we will play a song by our former co-host, Jenny Rempel, who took her life 3 years ago. She would have turned 28 this week. It's so hard to believe that Jenny is gone. I think about her often and hold much appreciation for all of her creative work as a vegan animal activist in Vancouver and beyond. One of her creative outlets was making music, and this song is by her former band, Hello Harmless, and is called Being Alive. Take care, Jenny. You will never be forgotten. And stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
We can't move mountains on our own, and that's when